welcome to the Aftershock Central podcast with Travis and Martin. He's Travis.
What up?
I'm Martin. Ronnie's not here. He ditched us. Can you believe it? He's not even on vacation. What's he doing?
He's a busy guy.
He is a busy guy. He's had a lot going on lately. So, it's okay. We forgive you, Ronnie. I still love you. Anyways, Travis and I are here to talk about Aftershock books. I hope everyone had a great new year. This is the first episode of the year, right? We haven't recorded since last year.
I mean, it's been like 2 weeks, right?
3 weeks.
Yeah.
3 weeks.
Feels like forever.
Yep. So there was...
Oh, yeah, because we missed last week.
Yeah. There was a book that came out last week, but we missed. And then the week before, there were no books. So this is... It's been 3 weeks since we put out an episode. That's fine. I mean, it's Christmas holiday. People don't listen to podcasts. Matter of fact, I was looking at the podcast stats this week, and I was like, oh, okay, everyone's coming back to work, because all the podcasts are having more people listen again, so that's cool.
Yeah, and I couldn't really listen to any podcasts over the break, you know, like that all dried up, because you're with family and whatever, you know, like they don't want to listen to my podcasts, unfortunately.
See, I'm listening to podcasts all the time. At work, I have a headphone in my ear at all times. So I'm listening to podcasts 8-9 hours a day, and then like if I'm going to run errands or whatever, like grocery shopping, I've got a podcast in my ear. And then when I run out of podcast, I listen to audiobooks.
Oh man, I'm jealous. Like I used to be able to do that stuff, but I just cannot concentrate if I've got like people talking in my ear. I can't do it. I used to be able to.
Maybe you should go keto, bro. I've got so much mental clarity. We're not talking about, this is not the keto podcast. Go listen to Nerd Legion. That's the keto podcast. Anyways, we're talking about a few books. We are going to talk about last week's book, which is Animosity number 18, but we'll do it at the end. We're going to kick things off talking about Prussian's Conviction Revenge. Number 5. It's the last issue. Last issue, Travis.
Yes.
I like the title of this issue, by the way. Animus, Adherence, Annihilation. It's very cool.
It's alliterative.
It is very alliterative. It's nice. It's a good read. Written by Patrick Clendon, who's got he's got a book coming out, doesn't he? Oh no, that's Ryan. Ryan's doing the OGN, the Oberon OGN. Marco Ferrari on art. We've got Patricia Comino on colors and Jim Campbell on letters. All right, Travis. You and I talked about this book very, very briefly before I hit the record button. I want you to tell me just what happened in this issue.
Okay, so as near as I can figure and remember, it starts out with, like, Welsh is, like, you know, fleeing scene, and he's got Marisol in tow. And Robot Paul, like, once they get back to the headquarters, he sees that happen, and he calls up Rennie, and he's like, yo, you know, they got Marisol here. You know, this is, like big problem, and they're like, we got to move the plan up to tomorrow, you know, like plans going down tomorrow or it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So then for some reason, Robot Paul like pulls an all nighter to finish up, this kind of luxury suite that he's been roped into, restoring. And subsequent to that, Rennie rolls up to a party for Welsh's son, who, like, I don't know if it's just a birthday party or like he's getting made or something. But you know, Rennie goes up to that and they're like, oh, hey, glad you're here. We're going to kill you now. He's like, I think not. And he jumps off the roof with a guy who's like got a tether. Does a John McClane, breaks through the windows back into the casino. And then he shoots at an elevator and like runs down, like jumps down the shaft with a jetpack. Jetpacks out the bottom of the shaft. And then Robot Paul blows the whole casino.
Yes.
And then mixed in there somewhere, you get a little bit, I think at the party, you see that like Rennie's people have like betrayed him. Like Marisol's there, and like the little guy,
yes,
is also there.
Peter Dinklage, like, yes,
yeah, yeah. So like they've been screwing him over, but he kind of deserves it because like he's a monster.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's kind of a douche.
I mean, like, how many people died, like, in, you know, just this one issue, just because, you know, like, he was trying to take out revenge on one dude.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the theme of this whole series, and I feel like we didn't really get that until now, but maybe I should have seen it sooner, because the issue kicks off with Rennie saying, "What's a plan?" And I think that theme pops out in a couple of different places. It seems like even through this whole revenge story that we're getting, he's got no idea what the hell he's doing.
Thank you. Yeah, do you, like, what do you think the plan is? Do you see a plan in this?
No, the only plan is to get revenge for whatever happened to him previously. That's the only plan. The plan is revenge. There is no, like, I'm gonna go in here and do this, and we're gonna plant decoys here and do that, and infiltrate this organization this way, that, and the other. It's just like, hey, I'm gonna show up, and I'm just gonna see what's going on, and we'll just see what happens. I'm just gonna start shooting, and hopefully get these bad guys. Like, that's the plan. There is no plan.
Yeah, but they make reference to moving it up and stuff, you know? Like it seems like there's a little bit more of a plan in there, but I don't know where it begins and ends.
Look, the only plan that's in here is by the main character of this book, which is Robot Paul. Because if Robot Paul was not around, he would have been killed in, like, issue one.
Yeah, Robot Paul is like his Oracle, kind of, or something, you know? He's Lifeline.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy's got no idea what he's doing. And it's interesting. It leads to some, like, odd storytelling, though. Because, like I said, sometimes I read this book and I'm like, what just happened? Like, I don't know what just happened. And maybe, like, that's part of the thing, right? Because there's no plan. Like, maybe he doesn't know, so I don't know what's going on. Because when we have these, like, action-heavy bits, it's just like one action scene after another. And you're like, well, how the hell did I get here? Like the jetpack thing. I was like, well, what? Like, what's going on? And then he can't get out of the damn thing, right? He's got to get his robots to help him get out of it. I don't know, man. It was weird. I enjoyed it. But going along for the ride, I was very confused. This is one of those books where I want to recommend it because I really enjoy it. But it's more about the experience of going through it than anything else, right? Because it's not like one of those books where you get to the end, like Animosity, right? You get to the end and you're like, well, holy crap, like this happened and that happened and this impacts that thing. Like with this book, there's none of that, I don't feel.
Yeah, I mean, what do you specifically like about it, you know? Like what appeals to you?
I like how fun and cheesy it is.
Yeah.
It's like when I watch Legends of Tomorrow on the CW. I don't watch it because it's a good show, but it is a good show. And the reason it's good is because it's cheesy as hell and it knows that it's cheesy and it presents itself that way. And that's kind of what this book does. I think the first couple of issues were a little more straightforward in terms of storytelling. But these last couple, I felt the same with every issue. I'm just like, I don't know what I read, but I love it. I want to see what the hell's going on after this. And I like the final couple of pages on this, even though I still didn't realize kind of how we got there. But I liked how it ended. And it seems like even though we get in, the end at the end, right? Most of these books are continued, don't end that way. It's like, you know, to be continued in volume two, whatever. This one just ends with end, but it does leave it open to more story. And, you know, this is like a Kurt Russell movie from the 80s.
Hmm.
Right? Where like, it's very light in plot, but it's just like, excuse me. But it's just like fun to watch the experience. And then you have these like really over the top moments at the end where like you're shown the hero in this like good light and you want to see like his next adventures, but you don't really know like what the previous ones were. I don't know. Like, the way I'm explaining this sounds terrible, right? Like, that's why I say I don't know how I would recommend this to somebody, because it feels like there's not a whole lot of depth, but I almost feel like that's part of the book itself, that it just kind of pokes fun at itself.
Yeah, I agree absolutely, dude. That's the way that I have to process it is, like, I think that it's meant to be funny.
Yeah,
you know, that like it's a comedy, and so like you know, it's, you don't necessarily read it the same way, you know, like it's not trying to be deep, and you shouldn't think about it too hard, mm-hmm. you know? So like, I think that's kind of what works best about it. You know, it's like, I think, you know, one of the things that I find interesting, I don't know how to grapple with it, is just like the nature of his character, because he's freaking evil, dude, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's killed a lot of people on this thing, and he's nuts. Like after doing all this, he's like one down, 100 more to go, you know? Like, and, you know, he's talking to like, the robot lady, Donna or whatever, the beginning of this issue. And like, everybody she knows and loves is dead because of him. And he's like, yep, well, you know, like, lesson learned, you know, like, turn this into something that's, you know, gonna like help you make something of yourself, you know, like, he's creating more people that are just gonna like perpetuate the violence.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, you know, like, I just I feel like it's very nihilistic. And I just think that's the nature of the comedy. And so, like, that's, again, how I have to process it. Because otherwise, it's like, what are we supposed to like this, you know, protagonist, you know? And I think it's kind of like, you know, yes and no, you know? Mm-hmm. He's funny, but he's, like, a monster.
Yeah. Aren't we all monsters, though, Travis?
Some more than others.
Yeah, I guess so. Where's my pesos? All right, let's rate it up.
All right, I will go 3.5 out of 5.
Man, I'm trying to shy away from these half ratings, but I'm gonna.
You're going back to the Netflix system?
No. I don't know. There's something about half ratings that just feels off to me. I'm gonna go with the half rating though. Sorry, 3.5 out of 5 as well.
Yeah, I also would just add as a final thought that like I think to another of your points earlier, I think that there were places where the art in like the action scenes for me was a little bit hard to read. Hmm. You know, I don't know if you kind of had that, but like I also had to read some of those pages several times over just to figure out what's happening and how like one thing connects to another. So yeah.
Yeah, I don't have too much problem with the art. I've enjoyed the art throughout the series, so whatever. To each his own. All right, let's go on to another final issue, Moth and Whisper number 5. This is written by Ted Anderson with art by Jen Hickman, letters by Marshall Dillon. All right, so I mean, I think this one is very straightforward. Basically, Nikki and I can't remember the Waverly kid's name, but they...
Walter,
there you go. They devise a plan to break into this mobster's secret base, and they're going to hack into his computers to get his secret codes. So Moth and Whisper go in and do that. We assume Nikki at first. It turns out that Walter is in the costume. They have a costume for Walter and a costume for Nikki. And Walter gets captured by the mobster and his henchmen, leaving Nikki to go and actually infiltrate into his office and kind of hack the codes. And oddly enough, give the codes to Walter's dad.
Yep.
That's basically the gist of it, right?
Yeah, and then they kind of, you know, powwow at the end, and she's like, okay, but you're going to, like, you know, get your dad to, like, clean up on some of the really shady stuff that he was doing.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, basically buy off the people who know my identity. And she's, you know, officially going into the family business with Hacker Lady as, like, her assistant.
Well, let me stop you right there, because we don't know if it's a Hacker Lady. She could also be genderqueer like Nikki is.
Sure. I mean, I feel like they give her name at some point. I don't remember what it is, but...
Well, Nikki could be either way also, though.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's... So this one was actually... It was interesting. There was a more definite and finite conclusion. I think what we learn about the way this world works at the end is actually kind of interesting and unexpected to me, because I always assumed that Waverly's organization, the Non Grata, was just as bad. And the way that this book ends either doesn't make that out to be the case, or it makes Nikki, what's the word that I want to use? Maybe less, more morally ambiguous, maybe? Because now Nikki's going to work for the wave release, kind of, giving over all the codes to this organization and making wave release organization be the one true power in the city. With the stuff that we've known throughout the series, I would assume would be just as bad. But apparently that's not the case. Maybe Waverly does have good intentions, even if he is a gangster. And he wants to give more control to the people, right? Because they talk about, judges, like, leaving and CEOs getting fired and this, that, and the other, because they're now being bought off by this other organization. And so that leads me to assume that Waverly does have good intentions. And to me, that was a little bit of a surprise. The fact that Nikki's okay with it also seemed like a bit of a surprise. And I don't know if maybe its mentality? Is that the pronoun we're using? It? Their mentality is maybe changed or clouded by their relationship with Walter. I don't know. Some of that seemed a little odd to me. And I want to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing, actually. You know, it's like all of the resources go to, a rival gang.
Yeah.
Couldn't they, be just as bad or become just as bad? Right. That's definitely possible. But I think that, that could be, maybe the takeaway from that discussion I was talking about where she meets up with Walter afterwards. She's like, no, but you need to stop doing this stuff, she referenced specifically, like the organ, black market,
yeah, the organ transplants.
Sales.
Yep.
So like, if you could extrapolate that out, like, I would think maybe that other shady stuff that they may be into, like beyond, like, I don't know, whatever is particularly heinous, like maybe he tamps down on that too. And also Nikki, I think, is there to kind of be a check on them. It's like, I'll be watching, basically.
Yeah.
So if they get too terrible, then they could, kind of sell them out to the next gang or whatever, like take them down just as easily, work at, loggerheads. So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's how I rationalize that piece of it.
I guess that makes more sense than what I was thinking. Because it just took me by surprise, and I was like, wait a second, like, this is kind of counter to everything that we've seen in the whole book. But maybe that's kind of the point, right? Because we know that Walter kind of wanted to get in on this plan in order to get in good with his dad, right? Because I got the feeling, at least, and I don't know if he explicitly said it, that even though he's the son of this mobster guy, this criminal organization, the dad maybe doesn't necessarily think he's ready to lead the organization. And maybe now, after this whole plot and taking Wolf down, he can prove to his dad that he can. And he is very different than his dad, right? And so it gives us some kind of hope to the future of this place where maybe Walter's ideals are much more rational than his dad's. And whereas his dad maybe was just after money until Walter proved him wrong, by being able to take Wolf down, he proves himself to be a worthy leader. And when Walter takes over the organization, then it's going to be kind of something a little more utopian, I guess.
Yeah, totally, dude. I think they maybe missed a trick with that it would have felt a little more complete if somewhere in there they were kind of like, and now Walter's taking over,
Yeah.
Whether kind of by his choice or whether his dad got forced out or something, So some kind of thing about that, and maybe a little bit more of, being a little bit more specific about Walter compared to his dad and their morality, the things maybe that Walter would do differently. If that stuff had been there, it'd be a little bit more complete on that theme.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
I also kind of wish that they had included, I felt like there was going to be a reveal about what happened to Nikki's parents, you know? And it, like, you know, I, maybe my disappointment is just like thinking that it would be there and then it's not. So like being wrong. But you know, it seems like if you weren't going to go there and have that be part of a story, then they could have just, you know, had an accident or something, you know, like the mystery didn't need to be cultivated if it wasn't going to be paid off.
So I see your point. However, I think it was handled just fine because ultimately the story is not about Nikki's parents. It's about Nikki and kind of stepping out of the shadows of her parents' background. You know what I mean? So by them never showing up, it almost shows us that, you know, Nikki is now their own person and they don't need to worry about what the moth did, what the whisper did, especially now that Wolf is out of the picture, right? All that kind of stuff is gone and we've got a blank slate and Nikki is now the moth and the whisper, right? I mean, Wolf calls her that, right? When they grab Walter and he thinks it's Nikki, he's like, oh, I've got the moth and the whisper.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree though. I would like to see a resolution for that at some point, but I'm okay with it not being now.
I mean, so you think it's coming back?
So it ends with a D end, and I haven't seen any announcements as to the future of this book, but I think it does leave it open enough where it could come back.
Yeah, I agree. Like they don't really tease it, but there's enough material to easily like expand the story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of to your point, you know, I actually feel like, you know, she's not even really kind of becoming her own person. It's kind of like really she's just now following in the footsteps of her parents. Mm-hmm. So that might be the payoff there, that, you know, like you tease this, you know, significant familial relationship and this is, since they're gone, this is her way of being close to them. It's like, is trying to do what they would do and, yeah, you know, like kind of continue their legacy.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh. I also, I'd be cool if it came back because, I mean, I was so intrigued by just the basic premise, you know, like talking about the kind of corporate states and, you know, basically like an economy of identity, you know, that's kind of the big commodity in this society. Like, that's all interesting, and I feel like they kind of just scratched the surface. Hmm. So I'd be down for it to come back and, you know, get into some of that other stuff.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's rate this one up. I'm going to rate this a 4 out of 5. I really like this book, and I think it's a pretty good conclusion to the whole thing. It wraps up a lot of the loose threads.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4 out of 5 too. You know, like I think it was maybe missing like kind of a like a wow, like, you know, like bombshell or something in the last issue, but it does a pretty decent job wrapping up what it was trying to do.
Yeah. All right, let's spend a couple minutes on last week's book, which is Animosity number 18, written by Marguerite Bennett, layouts by Raphael De La Torre, finishes by Elton Tomasi, colors by Rob Schraggy P. Schrager, and letters by Marshall Dillon. It's Schraggy P, bro. He's famous.
What up, Schraggy P?
Schraggy P. So this is the conclusion to the Walled City saga, I guess. Part 5 of Power. And man, things get serious in this book. I think we talked about this with issue 17 with the art change. How are you doing with the art change in this book? Because De La Torre is still doing layouts, but he's not doing all the art in the book. Is that changing the way you read this book in any way, or did you even notice the art change?
I actually didn't notice. I was surprised when you mentioned the finishes were somebody else. So, okay. I mean, it's not shocking to me, but, you know, like, I don't necessarily think it needs to be, you know, one specific person, you know, like, yeah. I could roll if there was an art change, but I didn't even notice it.
Yeah, yeah. I did notice. It's very subtle, but I could tell. I'm very familiar with De La Torre's art, so whenever I see the name and I look at the art, I'm like, it's a little off. But it explains why. And really, I think just by the fact that this guy's doing finishes, it may have enough of Dilatori in there where it's hard to tell the difference. But I thought it was beautiful regardless, so it doesn't matter. This book's always been very strong in the art. And, alright, so this is the conclusion to the Walled City stuff. So, we kind of free some of these breeder girls that have been hiding in the basement, constantly giving birth to women. What's the timeline out of curiosity? I was trying to figure this out. Has it been more than a year since the awakening of the animals?
Oh man, I couldn't speculate, but I mean, wouldn't you think that everybody that's, you know, like pregnant in this room, like that's happened since they've been there?
Well, yes. And the reason I ask is because we do see a few newborns as well. Matter of fact, towards the end, there's a cool interaction between a soldier and his mom, and she's holding a baby. So my assumption is that she had this baby in this breeding program. Cause I mean, her son, if he's in the military, he's probably at least 18, right? And maybe even a little bit older. So, ooh, I dropped my water. So my assumption is it's been quite a while. I know there was a time change early on, maybe like between issues 1 and 2 or 2 and 3, but I can't remember what the time lapse was between the two. But I mean, obviously it's gotta be at least a year, right? And probably more if this woman was able to create this community at the Walled City. I don't think this would be something that would just pop up immediately after the animals gain consciousness.
Yeah, definitely. This doesn't like pop up out of nowhere, you know. Yeah. And it seems kind of normalized, you know, like it doesn't seem like it's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
But like, so like to get people and like that treat it like, well, this is how things are. Like you would assume it's at least been a year or two, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, so give me some thoughts on this issue.
Okay, thoughts on the issue. Let's see. You know, so obviously, Jesse kind of like gets out the ladies who are down in the basement. I guess they were sedated or under anesthesia. Was that?
Yeah, that was
that
my
your,
assumption.
Like.
Yeah.
Reading.
Yeah.
So I kind of was surprised that's what they were talking about when they were talking about, like, you know, the uncooperative ones, like, go to sleep. You know, I thought they meant they were, like, killed or something. But,
oh, gotcha.
Yeah. And they seemed to, like, rouse from sedation pretty quickly, get on their feet, and then make a breakout.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're, you know, kind of coming out, and, you know, like there's still a bit of a melee between the animals and like some of the soldiers. And then there's a confrontation between the ladies and, the soldiers, and they're trying to keep them from leaving. I think the kind of the crux of the issue is really, you know, the women, like identifying, you know, these male soldiers who are trying to hide behind their helmets and be like, you know, like, how can you not acknowledge us? You know, like basically, you know, like they were exerting their strength over, you know, these kind of like fascistic military types, which
well,
I thought was
an
interesting moment.
But they're not, right? The soldiers aren't that. The soldiers are just doing what the headmistress tells them to do.
The one is definitely like wanting to, you know, like the one who kind of gets like chased down by the animals. Like
yeah.
He's not a good guy. Like he's violent. He's a killer.
But isn't that always going to be the case though, right? If you're indoctrinated into this culture, like why would you want to fight for this cause if you don't believe in it, right? I mean, obviously some of these guys maybe have doubts, but you're always going to have some folks that are just gung-ho about whatever it is that they're trying to protect. In this case, you know, the Walled City. But we see this kind of thing all the time, right? You see this now in popular culture and politics. The whole Make America Great Again thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they kind of were shocked to find out, or maybe some of them, like, the reality of what was happening to these women, you know? And I think that maybe that was, you know, facilitated by keeping the men and the women separate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if they weren't off living in different places doing different things, then maybe like the men wouldn't have been able to deal with it.
Yes. And that's a pretty common tactic in cults too, where you separate men and women in order to foster relationships and kind of negate some of the sexuality aspect of things. So I found that really interesting as a person that's very interested in the way that cults work. Cause I'm going to start a cult one day, Travis, the cult of comics, where everyone's going to love them. I promise one day everyone's going to love comics. And
yeah, dude.
And not threaten people on Twitter.
True believers.
Mm-hmm. The true believers. We're starting that right now. But I've always been fascinated by that. And that's a common tactic. You separate men and women, because then you're able to indoctrinate a little bit easier by doing so. I think the allegory in this particular issue has been stronger than many of the other allegories that this book has tackled over the 18 issues that this has been around. The whole issue, you've got lyrics from Mary Don't You Weep, which is a traditional African-American song, pre-Civil War song, made popular, I think, in the 60s by, I can't remember the singer. The one that just passed away.
Aretha
Franklin, that's right. She had a version of the song that she sang as well. But it's a very old song. And I think, to me at least, there were some very interesting parallels between not just the women's right movement, but also slavery, in particular in the South of the United States, in the way that these women are being treated. Because really, like, their only job is to make babies, you know? So they are definitely slaves to this society that the headmistress has created. And I think the reason for the headmistress being a woman has kind of partially to do with that as well. Because sometimes we have these very charismatic leaders that project a certain image of what they want the world to be, that's counter to what they themselves are, right? I don't know if you've ever heard the stories about, like, Hitler being Jewish, for example. And part of the reason that's why he started this whole movement, or, what's the other one? Cause he was an artist as well, and he was kind of, shunned from the art community by Jewish museum curators and art collectors as well. So I thought that whole thing was pretty interesting as well. I love the allegory of this book, and I know some people hate that kind of stuff, but I think the way that Marguerite does it works really, really well.
Well, yeah, I actually think that, like, this whole arc and what it's saying about the women, my takeaway really is more like, you know, that's kind of how we treat livestock, you know? Like, so weirdly, like, you know, in terms of forced breeding and separating the males from the females, you know, like, so I feel like that kind of emulates maybe our, you know, usual treatment of animals. And if you extrapolate from that, you could maybe argue that, like, they're comparing, you know, animal husbandry, et cetera, to slavery, in a sense, which is kind of what the whole comic is often about.
Sure. Yep, that's true. I also like the imagery about Noah's flood, right? That's one of the things that's an image in that song that's referenced in this issue. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it gets to the full lyrics, but if you look up the story of Noah's Ark, which happens in this song, after the flood recedes, God makes a promise to Noah that he's not going to destroy humanity by water again, right? That the next thing will be fire. And that plays nicely into this book, because at the end of it, the rain stops after the fight, and the whole city kind of burns to the ground. So I thought that was really well done as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Anything else in this one?
Yeah, I mean, just kind of like thinking about where we're going in the future. You know, like, this issue leaves off with, you know, like a large group of people leaving this walled city, mm-hmm. like with animals, assumedly in a group. So, you know, do you think that they're all going to travel together to some destination? You know, like, are they all just going to go wherever Jesse's headed towards?
That would be interesting. I don't know what the overall plan of this is, but I think it might hurt Jesse's journey if that's the case. Cause really the plan is for Jesse to get out west, right? To meet up with her brother. And if she's got this large group following her, it may be a hindrance to the story in some way. Maybe we'll have a group of them come along just to add a little spice to the story to get some more background on this world and how these people got to where they're at now. But if that's the case, I don't see it lasting more than a couple of issues.
Yeah, or they could just separate immediately.
Yeah,
you know, it's like thanks, bye. I'm just curious about that.
Yep.
Also, there was like an interesting part where all these boars show up.
Yeah, I love that part.
And they're like, what's that? It's the end of the world.
Yeah.
What's your take on that? You know, are those boars with the rest of the animals, or is that kind of foreshadowing, like maybe a future storyline where the boars are organizing and become threat?
Well, for one, boars are a threat.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have wild boars in California, but we have wild boars here, and wild boars are extremely mean and extremely dangerous. And whether they're tied to the animals, I don't know. I think in terms of the issue itself, maybe they are at least partially allied with the animals in this fight, and they show up kind of as the muscle, right? Like, your choice is you quit doing this terrible thing that you're doing to fellow man, or the boars are going to eat you.
Yeah, and I like, we see the people in the city eating pigs, so
yeah,
you know, maybe it's payback. But yeah, I was just thinking that, you know, if all of the wild boars in the country got together and you know, like, started coming after people, that'd be a bad scene.
Yep. Yes. If you're ever hiking and you come up to a wild boar, you better run your ass off, because those things are mean. They are delicious, though.
Yeah, dude, I've had wild boar sausage.
Dude, I love wild boar sausage. Wild boar jerky is freaking one of my favorites. All right, let's rate this one up. Travis, give me a rating.
I'll go 4 out of 5 for this one as well.
Cool. I'm also going to go 4 out of 5 on this one. We're on point this week.
Yeah, totally in sync.
Totally in sync.
Bye, bye, bye. Bye, bye, bye.
I was looking over one of these issues, and I for some reason got to the end of it. There's you know how they always do the three questions thing at the end of these books?
Yeah.
In the Aftershock announcements. So there's one with Phil Hester, and there's a line in here that I liked. It says, I'm also drawing a short story for the next Shock anthology. So, yeah. Hell yeah. I don't think that's announced, is it? I don't think so.
Well, you know, they printed it, so, like,
sure.
I'm sure they saw it before it went out, you know?
I'm sure.
I think it was kind of a foregone conclusion, you know, it's just a question of when, because, like, the first one was a huge success, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Joe loves doing these anthologies, so, yeah. Cool. By the way, happy birthday, Joe. I guess we can say that on the podcast. I know Ronnie tweeted out from the Aftershock Central account, but I wanted to do it on the podcast because Joe is awesome.
Yeah, happy birthday, Joe.
All right, next week we have a few books to discuss. We will have Baby Teeth number 14, Dark Nice. Arc number 13, and the next issue of A Walk Through Hell.
A spooky week.
Spooky week. God, yeah, you're right. Spooky week. This week was the week of endings. Next week is the week of crapping your pants. Cool. You can, of course, find us all on Twitter. Ronnie is at Rumbar316. Travis is at The Gray Magnet. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at AftershockPod. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week.
Shock the world!